So yesterday, my son was running around the house.
Sure.
Shouting, tea party, tea party.
Love this.
While holding my neti pot.
Holding your neti pot.
Yes.
I don't know which part's funnier, that your son is treating your neti pot like a tea party or that you have a neti pot. These are both amusing.
I had a sinus infection, so I need to, and it was kind of a fancy one that I ended up getting. It's like ceramic.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, it does look like a teapot.
Yeah. Probably not something you want your son running around the house with. Yes.
It's not a tea party I want to go to. You know, it's not necessarily, I'm not really a tea party guy already.
Sure, but neti pot party is not.
that's not making the tea more appealing. That's for sure.
Let me strain your teeth through my nostrils.
All right. Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Noah Elise McCarter.
Nah.
Yeah.
We're not even going to justify her absence by
discussing.
We
don't even know. She said she can't be here. And we don't know why.
You know, you get what you pay for. So,
We have a murder mystery party.
Yeah.
This Saturday.
It's coming up.
Do you think you did it? Did you done it?
did I done it?
Yeah.
I've done several murder mystery parties with you.
Yeah. Have you ever done it?
I've never done it, nor have I been done in.
Okay.
I have always been on the outskirts, and only once have I gotten it right. So my track record at these is not great, but I always have a good time.
Okay,
so
this will be a fun.
I'm here to have fun.
Party for young adults.
Yeah.
And young adults is a pretty generous, you know.
I mean, you and I are both in it, so that's...
Yes. And people older than us.
Right.
Are in it. So, you know.
Young-ish.
Adults. Yeah.
I will say that I think this is the most likely opportunity for me to be in one of these where I might have done it and or being done in.
Okay.
I think usually I've been further down the list of characters.
Sure. Okay. You're towards the top of the list.
Yeah. I think I've got a better chance that I either did it or am done in.
Okay.
I don't know.
At least we'll also be there.
Yeah.
Presumably.
Who knows?
So, yeah. We'll let you know next week who did it.
That's right. Listen in. Well, actually, by the time this is released, we will already know.
Yeah, but we'll let you know.
We'll let you know. Yeah. So, spoiler alerts.
Yeah.
Hey, I got an email from a listener real quick.
Okay.
So this came in like right after you were getting ready to start your parental leave.
Okay.
And so
we're right on top of this one then.
Well, I mean, I didn't share it because we didn't record episodes for like two months. Then I forgot about it. So.
That's fair.
But this was in response to an episode we did, What Does the Bible Say About? And we talked about cremation. And so one of our listeners, Annette Hout, wrote in because we asked how people wanted to be buried in that episode.
Wow, okay.
And so she wrote in that she wants to be buried under a sapling and someday become a tree. I believe this is an option. I just haven't really looked into it. And she said that we may share this on air. So
great.
Went ahead and did that. Yeah, I think that's cool. Cool opportunity. Do a natural burial. Get your ashes mixed in with the ground beneath a tree. Give life back to the earth. I think that's very cool.
I think this is a thing that I've seen. I've not really done any research on it, too. So.
But I have seen it also. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's...
I think you get into the ground, like your ashes go into like a compostable container and you're kind of buried that way and it just back into the soil. I think. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hopefully whoever is burying you has a green thumb.
You know, that's the point.
That would be a real bummer.
We got a lot of trees around here. Maybe we can just start offering this as a service here at Lord of Life.
Well, you got a new tree, right? I don't want some old tree that's already out there.
It's going to like get cut down or fall over in the storm next fall.
Yeah, for sure. Like, let me check out the health of this tree before you spread my ashes around it.
You know, by the time I'm spreading your ashes, I don't think you're concerned about the health of the tree. I'll just go ahead and say that.
So. I have wishes written down.
Sure.
You know where my will is.
I do. It's true.
So
I witnessed it.
Yeah, I need a witness, and you signed it.
That's
and then
right.
Knew where I put it. Yep.
Do I know where you put it?
It's in my desk drawer.
Okay. I know now. Am I supposed to remember that?
I don't know.
Is that
it's
part of my
fine.
Job?
It's fine. Yeah. Somebody will find it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When we clean out your office. Oh, look.
Good luck. Yeah. Under all the other stuff.
That's right. Before we light a match to it.
All right. I've got some good news.
Oh, okay. I like good news.
For our nation.
Oh, we could use some good news for our nation.
Fentanyl seizure at the border is down.
That seems like a bad news.
Or it
that
is
means
a good
more
news.
Is getting
I don't
through.
Know. It's hard to say, right? Does it mean more?
Is
it overall less is coming across the border? Or are we catching less? It's hard to say.
Yeah.
I don't really know. But
it's news. We have news for the nation.
Fentanyl seizures are coming down, but something is going up.
Which border are we crossing with fentanyl? Or is it all borders?
This is actually the Canadian border.
Okay. So fentanyl seizures at the Canadian border are down.
Yeah.
Okay. But something's up.
Something is up.
Seizures of, let's see. Okay, we're getting ready for tariff. So what are things that Canadians have that we're trying to smuggle in? Maple syrup.
Sure.
Poutine.
We don't want that poutine. Y'all can keep it.
Are we smuggling in Canadian whiskey? Are we smuggling in politeness and apologies?
We are smuggling eggs.
Ooh, okay.
Egg interceptions up 116% this year.
Okay, that's a lot. I mean, it's up a lot, but I don't know how many they started. Like, did they seize like,
it feel like
one
it
egg
like
last
zero.
Year?
Yeah, right. Like how many eggs are being smuggled across the border? None. Because well, why?
Yeah. Yeah, egg smuggling is up infinity percent because we got one egg.
All right, officials have made 3,254 egg-related seizures.
That's a lot.
In January and February.
How many individual eggs, does it say? Or just, I mean, that's different people
those
trying to.
Different seizures of eggs. Yeah.
So unknown quantities. It could be thousands, millions perhaps of eggs.
Yeah. Coming across the Canadian border.
Sure.
Those Canadian eggs.
I'm assuming, are Canadian eggs cheaper? Like, I mean, do they not have the bird flu thing happening? So their eggs
they are
not,
cheaper.
Okay.
Yeah. I have the data here. At time of writing this thing.
Sure. Who knows what it is.
In Windsor, Ontario, $3.93. A dozen eggs.
That's a good price.
And in the other side of Michigan, $8.50.
Yeah.
So
it's a big deal. So you get those black market Canadian eggs, you can turn a pretty profit and they can still save money.
Canadian eggs, and maybe they'll smuggle across some Canadian bacon for you too.
Yeah. There you go.
That's definitely worse.
Keep our own bacon. Yeah. 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 So now you're just walking up to a guy in a trench coat and he opens up, hey, want some eggs?
Hey, kid.
Got the eggs right here.
I'll give you one hard boiled egg for free. Get them hooked. I don't think that has ever happened, like
that's
for drugs or anything. Like
that somebody had a jacket and
I think
opened it up.
The only person, the only group out there that's ever offered me something for free that's like a, you know, a sketchy thing is gambling websites.
Sure.
Every podcast I listen to about sports has like, sign up and get $50 free.
Right.
And I'm like, they know.
Yeah, they absolutely know. Yeah. They know this is addictive.
Yeah, so like, that's the only place I've ever seen this. I've never once been offered drugs for free.
Well, how often have you been in a place where they're offering you drugs?
Very little. So
you might not be.
But maybe if I go to the Canadian border, I'll be starting getting those free eggs.
That's what I'm looking for. I want the free hit of an egg. I'm scrambled, poached, all
over
my jacket.
What kind of egg would it most entice you?
Well, I assume they're coming across in the shell.
Yeah, but like if they're like, if there's a cooked egg, what is your cooked egg preference?
You know, it really depends on what I'm having. I like eggs in a variety of forms. But if I'm just going like easy, I want like eggs in a scrambled hash. That's real good.
Yeah. I mean, scrambled is very good eggs and they are also the easiest ones to make. So.
Yeah. But I also like an over easy on top of a potato sausage hash. That's very tasty.
Yeah.
I like a poached egg on a, what's it when you get the English muffin with the thing and the stuff?
Oh, yeah. An Eggs Benedict.
Yeah. I like those.
Why did Benedict get an egg's name? Is it Benedict Arnold or is it another guy?
Probably another guy, but I'm gonna like that it's Benedict Arnold. I think that the Eggs Benedict are betraying me every time I order them.
They're betraying my waist. That's right, everybody?
I mean, it is like a whole bunch of butter. The sauce is just butter.
It's very good, though.
It's delicious. But
I can get down with some eggs. I like eggs.
Sure, yeah.
You know.
And a chef's hat that has all the different ways to make eggs, as you've told us before.
Yeah, that's what it means. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So there you go. Egg seizure. Would you, you know, smuggle eggs across the border?
No. Well, I mean, not knowingly. I might like, hey, here's a good deal on eggs. And we finished a trip early and I take eggs back with me. But I'm not going to be like, let's get these eggs back and try to make a profit on them. Like, I don't make a habit of intentionally breaking the law.
Sure.
Only accidentally.
Sure. That's fair. You know, every trip we've ever taken with the kids, a kid has gotten stopped by TSA.
Absolutely.
The same kid.
Multiple times.
Has gotten stopped by TSA.
On the same trip.
Cannot figure out your bug spray does not go in your backpack. Or maybe he's trying to smuggle it. I don't know.
Empty your water bottle.
Yeah.
Look him in the face. Did you empty your water bottle? Yes. 5 minutes later, TSA. Whose water bottle is this? Dang it.
So
every time.
So, yeah. Well, it's good to know that they are cracking down on eggs.
Oh,
smugglers.
There it is. Hey. Yeah, nicely done.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The yolk's on them.
Yes.
On egg them. Smugglers. Do you think these are like the fentanyl smugglers just like turn to eggs? Or like maybe we can get through, like they're cracking down on fentanyl, so let's just do eggs instead?
Maybe.
Or is this a whole new breed of smugglers?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, is this going to be some gang warfare? Yeah. The egg guys versus the fentanyl guys.
Sure, yeah.
I'm, you know, I'm here for it. Yeah. You know, now we look forward to the movie released about
with the dance version where they sing and yeah,
sort of like West Side Story.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm for it.
I love a good gang musical.
Sure. Yeah.
West Side Story, Romeo and Juliet.
Do they call themselves the Deviled Eggs? That's what I would do.
Oh, yeah. that would be a good gang name. That's solid. Yeah.
All right, let's get to our main topic.
Okay.
Okay.
Also with food.
Also food related. Yeah. So you know the answer here.
Okay.
I'm going to give our audience a time to think what they think is the answer.
How long do you want me to give them? Because dead air.
I'm going to give them like 10 seconds. Okay. Right. We'll talk to that 10 seconds. All right. There's a common church feature that is getting chopped from new developments.
Oh, the way you phrased that has a clue, listeners. You can listen to Patrick's phrasing.
And if you're a member of our church, we have this feature.
We do.
But for new churches that are being built, this is what's getting not included in the architecture plans, not included in their building process.
Yeah.
And I'll give you, maybe you have time to think. And it is...
Sanctuaries?
It's not sanctuaries.
There's a lot of churches that I think are planning to do away with those, or at least in the way that they're carrying out their practice.
They don't look like church. They don't look like church sanctuaries. They look auditoriums. Right.
Well, I mean, that's less of my concern. More of, anyway.
Sure. it is the kitchen.
Ooh, the church kitchen is...
The church kitchen...
Getting chopped, as Patrick said. Yeah, a little clue there. All right. The church kitchen's going away. We have a lovely kitchen.
We have a kitchen remodel.
We did.
All right. This is from Christianity Today by Daniel Silliman.
Nailed it. Silliman.
It's S-I-L-L-I-M-A-N.
That's Silliman. Yeah, that's absolutely Silliman. Yeah.
You can't take yourself seriously with that. Come on, Daniel. Become serious, man.
get a professional name, all right?
Church kitchens are disappearing.
Okay.
They're disappearing from rural, suburban, and urban churches, from liberal and conservative churches, contemporary and liturgical, mega churches, and the medium size.
Everybody's doing away with them.
We're getting rid of the kitchen.
Get them out. Get them gone.
Yeah.
Okay. But not at Lord of Life.
Well, I guess we have not done a remodel.
I mean, we remodeled our kitchen in 2019.
But we didn't tear the church down and rebuild.
That's true. We did not do that.
Start from scratch.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, we did invest money in our kitchen to make it nicer.
Yeah. And we're about to invest money in our fellowship hall to make it nicer.
That's true. He says, no one tracks exact numbers. There's no census of fellowship halls, but architects who specialize in sacred spaces told Christianity Today that the trend is hard to miss.
Mm.
Jacob Slagle, who teaches architecture at California Baptist University and designs church buildings, said, can't remember the last time I was asked to design a big kitchen. Small kitchen, maybe.
Okay. Maybe a small kitchen.
Yeah.
This is interesting. So before we get too far into this, what's the purpose of a church kitchen? Let's think about that. Why do churches have kitchens?
Yeah. Well, obviously the first one is to have food.
Sure. That's step one.
Step one.
But why does a church need to have food? Like what? Because every church that I've been in the last 38 years of my life has had a kitchen, a pretty significant kitchen, and has had uses for it. So why did the church, I guess we can go back further than this, right? And I think the article talks a little bit about this too.
Right? Yeah.
The history of churches is not one full of kitchens. Like, the first Christians in, the 300s, as they were moving from house to house, I guess they had a kitchen in the house of some sort, but they weren't building their early churches with kitchen space. Cathedrals were not being built with kitchen space. Mm-hmm.
If you go look at, the cathedrals in Europe, there are no kitchens.
No, I mean, that's not their function.
At least they weren't original kitchens. They might have them now. I have no idea.
I'm comfortable saying there are no kitchens. Yeah. What purpose do we think the church kitchen serves today, or like why did it develop? Maybe as a
so they do have some insight here.
Sure, let's hear it from Mr. Silliman.
The age of church kitchens didn't really get going until rapid urbanization in the 1880s
In
the United States.
So this is an American phenom.
Yeah, city offered saloons
like baseball and
jazz.
Yep, American phenomena.
That's what we got. What else do we got?
I mean, we invented basketball.
That's true.
And American football.
What has the world done for us?
Soccer.
Okay, fine. They can keep their soccer.
Real football.
The city offered saloons, amusement parks, and pool halls, places designed to attract and corrupt young minds with fun. This is from a historian, not from Daniel Silliman. Churches are a competitor in the market of entertainment, and the church had to use every tool at hand, including food.
Now, I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
Right? That it became an opportunity for us to connect with the community and use every tool in much the same way that churches even now are trying to use every tool at hand to connect with the community in a rapidly increasing area of technology and of engagement and of, you know, social whatever, right? Like, churches are still trying to figure the same thing out. And so the kitchen as a function of how do we connect with the community as its kind of birthplace is really interesting and in a fascinating place. I think my sense would be many churches, and in some ways including Lord of Life, many churches have lost that function of the kitchen. And the kitchens have become internal use primarily. Yeah. Primarily.
And I think that's why we're seeing kind of like many churches saying, like, we just don't do this. Like, this is not for us. We got to, it's a waste of space. And, you know, if like everybody's like hanging out in a lobby or we have a welcome center and they're kind of like, then this giant fellowship hall remains empty, why have it?
Yeah.
Like, why invest our building space to it and we don't use our kitchens and it's not, we're not using it to draw the community in. We're using our dynamic preacher or music or other aspects of community, not food. And so we just, you know, we're not going to invest in it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that we're definitely kind of seeing our, according to Silliman, we're seeing that across the nation.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's happened is that, you know, I remember growing up and going to church potlucks and, you know, everybody brought their own homemade dish, right? That was just what people did. And so you had the classic casseroles that were there. You had the one person who always brought Kentucky Fried Chicken that everybody loved. That was the best thing on the table.
Absolutely.
You had five different versions of macaroni and cheese, eight different potato salads, right? Whatever it was.
A tater tot hot dish.
We didn't, you know, we were not far enough north for the tater tot hot dish to be a thing. That was more Minnesota, Wisconsin. But, you know, similar items, right? And that's just what everybody did. I think there's a point at which restaurant variety became so abundant and affordable that stopped being appealing for people. Like, that stopped being a reason to come to church to have the potluck, because that was where you're going to get to have, you know, Miss Jeannie's casserole or like, that was what you were going to get. And I remember, you know, I had a member in my first congregation over in Columbia, South Carolina, who grew up in rural South Carolina in the mid 1900s. And they're like, there was no restaurant. There was no movie theater. If we wanted to have social time with our friends and with our families, we had a picnic at church and everybody brought food. Like, that's what we did.
Yeah.
And that era is gone.
It is.
And so, you know, if that draw is, well, I can go out with my family and get a reasonably priced meal that is hot and well prepared and tastes really good, or I can come and get, you know, somebody else's casserole that I don't really care for, you know.
Yeah.
Where are you going to go? Right. I mean, that's.
Well, I think that's one of it is we have more restaurant and food for options and varieties there. And the other part that they kind of mention is, you know, like, if you have a church kitchen and to provide food, you need somebody to prepare that food.
Sure.
And there are less people available to prepare food now.
Yeah.
You know, they cite, like, in the 70s, about a third of married women with children under 18 had jobs outside the home.
Mm-hmm.
By 1980, that was 50%. Mm-hmm. And by the...
Just 50 women.
just 50 women. By 2010s, more than 70%. Yeah. So, I mean, like, we're just seeing, like, there's just less... You know, and women is usually what they kind of say. And,
sure.
You know, maybe there's some sexism there, but like maybe also like women are typically at churches doing more in the kitchen than men.
Historically, they would have been.
Historically speaking.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, in his interview, he says, churches just don't have people to run a kitchen. You have to have at least half a dozen people who can show up and cook. And like, they just don't have that.
Yeah.
You know?
There's also a lot more regulation now about, you know, because how we built our kitchen impacted what we are and are not allowed to do. And, you know, what we choose to do with our kitchen also impacts what kind of licensing we have to have from the county, from the, you know, area, right? And like, what training do people have to have?
Yeah.
And frankly, a lot of that's good, because I don't have any statistics on this, but I'm willing to bet that there were a lot of, you know, varying foodborne illness outbreaks at church picnics across the late 1900s. Yeah. Right, where you've got mayonnaise sitting out for hours or somebody undercooked a chicken or whatever,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, like, the fact that we have those things in place are all good. I don't want people to be getting salmonella or whatever from our food.
Mm.
But it does complicate having a kitchen. It makes it more of a process, more involved, to make sure that you can meet those standards and keep people safe in that way.
All right. So we kind of dove through a little bit of history, a little bit of maybe some of the why churches are kind of getting away. Any other reasons you think why churches are just getting away from kitchens before you kind of move on?
Why they're getting away from kitchens? You know, I think, and we talked a little bit about the kind of community aspect of it. I think that we're just finding other ways that people want to connect. You know, I think people, you mentioned the Welcome Center earlier. I think people are more likely to sit around and have a cup of coffee, so to speak, than they are to...
Coffee and a donut.
Than they are to like come to a full meal, or like have a desire to go into a kitchen and cook a full meal, right? And you know, one of the things that some very, very large churches are doing is they have like full service cafes where you can like order food. So I guess there's a kitchen, but it's a kitchen that's like staffed by a, you know, catering company of some kind. And, you know, they're providing that.
Yeah. So what do you think? Should we get rid of our kitchen?
I don't know that we need to abandon our kitchen altogether, right? We have some very meaningful uses for our kitchen, which I think are really helpful. I think our kitchen puts those to good ministry purposes. I do think that our kitchen right now at Lord of Life primarily is serving those within our building. You know, we do funerals and things like that where we're certainly having encounters with people outside of the building, but those are, funerals in particular, are not things that we would have to have a kitchen for.
Correct.
Because, you know, our funerals, we're bringing in catered trays of, you know, sandwiches. And it's a wonderful spread. I'm really proud of our team that does it. I don't want to disparage that at all. But could they do it without a kitchen? Yeah, they could do it without a kitchen. Or at least without the kitchen that we have.
A smaller kitchen.
The kitchen that we have really comes into play on our Wednesday night meals, which is a wonderful ministry. But right now is serving our people. And that's okay. It's okay to have ministries that serve our people. But that's its purpose.
So, I was thinking about this. Like, I think maybe churches who have kitchens, who have grown up in the kitchen realm, have kind of taken them a little bit for granted. Not necessarily thought through how can we utilize our kitchen as a community building tool, an evangelism tool, a service tool, and not thought through those types of things. That this is a tool that we could use better. And to have a kitchen and only be serving coffee and donuts out of it, that's not using your kitchen. That's not using that tool at all. And I think, we use our, that tool okay. You know, like, I think we're doing well on one aspect of those, but we could definitely be more creative on how to utilize it on other aspects. But I think that's interesting because, like, one of the reasons kind of our Wednesday night programming, I think, has gotten bigger and better is because of the kitchen work. Like, because people aren't showing up. We have a thing called Music, Meals, and More, if you're unfamiliar. And that's, there's children's music, there's adult choir, and there's sometimes either games or Bible studies for adults, you know, things like that. But there are plenty of people who are coming to those things who are not parents of children who are and are not going into a choir. And they're coming just to have that socialization. Like, that's the primary driver of those things. And maybe even, maybe for everybody. Like, like, if there was just no meal at all, it was just music and more, maybe we would have far less people coming to this event, you know, like, but by having the meal, it has driven engagement to it.
Agreed.
And for several of the parents that I've talked to, and I put myself in this situation, it's just kind of nice to have, like, I just show up and there's a meal. You know, I don't have to think about it. I mean, my kids probably won't eat it, but, you know, like, they, unless it's chicken nuggets and french fries, but, you know, like,
your kids notwithstanding, right? It is a good meal.
It's, the meal's great. I have no problems with the meal. Like, my kid just will only eat chicken nuggets and french fries right now. So.
That's the reality. That's where we are.
So,
I think that's an interesting point. And I think there are ways in which we could be more creative about this. And this is maybe where the conversation turns away from just, like, our kitchen at Lord of Life, or our use even as kitchens as churches, and to our kitchen as, like, the home. Because, it, like, if you think about our kitchen in the home, for many of us, where are the barriers that stop us from using that to build community with others, right? I think a lot of us are intimidated by the notion of cooking for others or having people into our home for a community, having that kind of opportunity to build around that. And I wonder if that's the same kind of convenience of, well, let's just meet these people and go out to a restaurant or something like that, as opposed to inviting these people into our home. Because there is, there's a personal, there's a level of intimacy and personal connection that comes just by crossing the threshold into someone's home, in much the same way that happens when they cross the threshold into our church, right? And the kitchen can be a place where that can really be built and cemented and solidified, but it also can be a place of concern and frustration. So, I'll just put that out there as a thought.
You know, I think when we look at Jesus, so much of his ministry, and you know, this is a thread you might have to train yourself to look for, has food is a big part of it. And you see him, like, eating and dining, and, like, again, like, those things could just be easily overlooked if you're just reading the narrative without hearing or feeling the implications of it. That to share a meal with somebody is a special thing for Jesus and the early church. And the other church gatherings were centered around a meal. You know, like, we now do communion, but for them, it's an actual meal.
Right.
Like, and you can feel that when Paul's writing to some churches and be like, hey, some people are overstuffed and drunk, and some people are starving.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that would never look like our communion, because that's an impossibility.
Everybody's hungry at our communion.
Like, nobody's coming to communion thinking, I'm going to be fed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get my bread, I'm going to get my little thimble of wine, but getting drunk or overstuffed, something has gone very wrong.
Yeah. Like, what did you do?
If that has happened at our communion.
Yeah.
But for the early church, that was a possibility because it was a meal, right? Yes. Like, because it was something, and they just called that communion.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying we're doing communion wrong or true.
Well, they did what we call communion as part of a meal, right? So they were eating, and then there was the portion where they did the bread and the wine. Like, so it was all of it,
Yeah, so I do think that there's value on sharing food together.
Yes.
And dining together has a value. It's more community building, it's more bonding, it's less like this is a meeting or less like this. It has that value there. And so I think it does matter. Now, do you need a kitchen in your church to do that? I'm not necessarily sure. But I think if you do have a kitchen, and maybe this might inspire us, our church, to be like, how could we use it better?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for the community, because not a lot of community spaces have kitchens.
Yeah.
And so that might be just questions that churches have to wrestle with, and because no church needs space that is unused.
Sure.
You know, like, that just doesn't make
sense. You don't need space to just be empty.
Yeah.
That doesn't do us any good.
Yeah. So how to use it better might be an interesting question for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, our kitchen and our fellowship hall are not empty by any means, right? I mean, they're used on a regular basis, but I agree. We could be using them more creatively. I would even hesitate to say better. I think we could continue to be more creative in how we look to use them and how we look to utilize that space. I think there are opportunities for us to use food and kitchens as a means to connect with the world outside of our walls in the same way that they did originally. I think there's still those opportunities.
Yeah. So Silliman did ask architects, what's next? If they're getting rid of kitchens, what's
coming?
What's coming? Like, what's the new thing? Oh, okay.
Water parks.
I'm for it. Yeah.
Baptismal water parks.
Sure.
Into our baptismal tide
slide.
Pool.
Yeah. Is that looks like maybe more childcare co-ops, co-working spaces,
ooh,
kind of thing.
Interesting.
I think that's a very interesting way. Or there could be renewed interest in designs that elicits feelings of awe with extra emphasis on art and natural light.
Look at that. A little throwback to the cathedral. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that.
Probably not that, but yeah.
But yeah, maybe more stained glass, maybe more, you know, actual architectural interest, you know, instead of just making.
Big box.
It can't just be functional. Mm-hmm. It has to be beautiful.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's kind of like, maybe that's what's coming next for churches, how they're going to serve their communities and their people is through architecture or through childcare.
Yeah.
And if we're looking at, well, more and more women with children are working, maybe childcare is maybe a better use of a child, maybe that is like a way to serve your community is to have that, you know, that support.
Yeah.
You know?
Offering high quality, affordable childcare is absolutely a service to the community.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do think, whatever church you belong to, I hope these are questions that they're wrestling with. How does our building, our structure best serve not only the needs of our members, but the needs of our community? And how can we get more creative with both of those questions is I something we should all be wrestling with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Okay. There we go. How do we use our kitchens?
Yeah. There you go. Church kitchen.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Maybe a thing of the past. Yeah.
Maybe. Still here. Don't take a sledgehammer to our kitchen just yet.
Yeah, I like the kitchen.
Let's just play a hypothetical game.
Okay.
If we were to get rid of the kitchen tomorrow.
Sure.
We had a unilateral decision. Kitchen is going away. We're going to utilize that space for something else.
Okay.
What would you put into our kitchen?
It's really not that big of a space.
I mean, it's a big enough room. It could be something.
It's a room. Yeah. Like it's definitely. But it's not like we're. I guess like that also probably means the fellowship hall is probably going away too.
Okay, sure. So kitchen and fellowship hall going away. What are you building there?
I think, you know, we have a preschool. I think expanding that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, right now its hours are limited, but I think there's opportunity there to kind of expand that bigger. We have a middle school right across the street. Mm-hmm. So I think some possibilities could exist right there of how do we welcome in middle school students differently, you know, especially like providing
kind or of at
like
all
space or, you know, things like that. That could be an option. We host several AA groups. So I think, you know, how can we, and maybe this would be kind of like us as a community thinking, what does a community need?
Yeah.
How do we get there?
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, maybe it's a therapy space, you know?
Yeah.
So like, but
those are all great options.
Thank you. Yeah.
I want to build a roller coaster.
Sure, a roller coaster sounds really good.
That's my plan.
I'm pro roller coaster.
Yeah. You took that more seriously than I was expecting. So sure. Yeah. Good job. Good for you. All right.
All right.
Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, you know where you can find all of our stuff. You can, of course, send us emails like Annette did today. You can let us know what your memories of the church kitchen are. And if you ever caught a foodborne illness from a church potluck, we want to hear that story, too.
What's your go-to potluck item?
Oh, yeah, your potluck dish. What's your dish?
You're more of a cook than I am. What is your go-to potluck item? You're bringing something to the potluck.
Oh, man, yeah. Probably a variation on macaroni and cheese because my kids will eat it, right? Yeah, and so you know, it's always safest to take a potluck item that you know your own children will eat.
Sure.
So they have something that they'll eat.
That's fair.
That's usually where we go.
Yeah. Okay.
We also don't go to a lot of potlucks anymore. That's just not not our thing.
Yeah, church potluck is. We don't do that. I think that is kind of dying down.
Yeah. Probably for good reasons.
Sure. Yeah.
Foodborne illness amongst the tops.
Yeah.
Anyway, send us your thoughts, your favorite potluck dish, and or a foodborne illness story. Send that beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.